It is the KSRO Good Food Hour. I am Steve Garner, and across from me is the one and the only Chef Jacques Pepin. No, wait, it's Chef John Ash. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
I am well. We've made it through another year. It's quite remarkable. December 1987, and here we are, December 2024.
So this is not AI. We were just talking about it.
We were talking about the miracle and horrors of AI being able to reproduce almost anything imaginable and almost indistinguishable from real live conversation. Although at this point it's a little bit too manicured and meticulous, but you can recreate almost any content now, audio-wise, and fool people. Sometimes it's benign and entertaining. Other times you can be scammed, obviously, out of your life savings, depending on who's impersonating who. Hi, this is your son calling. Yeah. Hi, this is so-and-so. And the voice is identical. So we were talking about, is AI just going to take over everything?
Well, that was my question to you. Are we going to be replaced?
Well, that probably would have come way before an AI.
Yeah.
There's always going to be, I think there's going to always be a place for live, spontaneous conversation, interaction that can't really be replicated easily at this point by AI. I'm sure as things become more sophisticated and refined, it will be indistinguishable from our conversation here, with its starts and stops and flubs occasionally. That's what real conversation is all about. The AI that we have heard is meticulous. It's refined.
Yeah.
It is flawless for 20, 30 minutes. Well, conversation is not that way how human beings interact. But if you're just looking for raw conversation and data that doesn't really have a lot of soul and spark, it's a remarkable technology.
So what do you think it'll do to things like cookbooks? Because there the information is there, and if it can be presented in a meticulous way, that's great.
It's another avenue, another resource, depending what people are going to want to spend their money on and their time. It will find a place, and it will certainly replace other venues. We know this. It's the way technology evolves. Not everything can coexist at the same time. Perhaps there will be smaller and smaller outlets for things like us. Of course, we've seen this evolve since 1987. My gosh, we're not new to this. But there still is always going to be a place, as our listeners tell us, for live, meaningful conversation. Yeah. Yeah. That's not going to change. And speaking of cookbooks, which you just did, I made our usual annual
believe you did this. Have you done this before?
I have every year. But remember, a whole year goes by and we forget.
Yeah.
But every year I do a cookbook authors from going on from 1988 onward of all the cookbook authors who we've had on the show for the year. And I just want to go through this quickly because I bet if you were like me, John, some of these I forgot.
Yeah, me too.
Until I revisited my master sheet.
I looked at them and I thought, who was that?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And some of these were like, oh, that interview was so much fun.
Yeah.
I wonder. So let's start with that. We're going to go back from December 30th of 2023. Our last interview of the year was George Ann Brennan, Pistachio, Savory and Sweet Recipes Inspired by World Cuisines. That was a dynamite fun time with George Ann. She's probably written, 30 cookbooks, 40 cookbooks. She's masterful. January 5th of this year, this was a wild interview. Nancy Silverton, the world-famous chef from Los Angeles, wrote a book called, I got to take a deep breath, The Cookie That Changed My Life and More Than 100 Other Classic Cakes, Cookies, Muffins, and Pies That Will Change Yours Too. It was a masterful book.
It was. It was almost too much.
It was almost too much.
Too much.
but you know this is going to be in the running for best baking book of the year in the coming year. In January 12th, we invited Leila Habib, who wrote the book Lebanese Cuisine, which was magnificent. And it was a reprint of a book that her mother had written in the 1970s. And joining us in the studio was the wonderful chef Christina Topham, who owns Spread Catering and Restaurant in Boise Hot Springs, also of Lebanese descent. And that was a wonderful morning of dining on some of her great food and also talking Lebanese cuisine. Robert Bradley, Eating Peru, A Gastronomic Journey. We did a phone conversation with him and learned quite a lot about Peru. And we realized what an, I never realized what an epicenter culinarily was Peru.
It's become that, for sure.
Even more so.
Yeah.
Then in March, to me, one of the most meaningful and articulate people we had on the show this year was Crystal Wilkinson. She was the Poet Laureate for Kentucky from 2021 to 2023. And she really knocked us out with her new book, Praise Song for the Kitchen Ghosts, Five Generations of Black Appalachian Cooks. That was a very meaningful
talk. Was. And, you know, I didn't hear much about it after our interview.
Well,
actually,
again,
for many of these books, because they come and go so
they
quickly.
Come and go, and these gems along the way are forgotten and somehow, hopefully, will be rediscovered.
Yeah.
We had a fun interview on March 8th with Becky Grassley. Pie is messy. She's been making pie for 50 years, and she owns several pie shops in the Southern California area, and she was a lot of fun for us to honor Pie Month, you know. March 15th or so, Pi R Square, Pi Day. Then we had
PIE.
Then Judith McLaughlin joined us on March 15th, a return to Ireland, a culinary journey from Ireland to America to celebrate St. Patrick's Day. Then a scientist, Dr. Ariel Johnson. Remember Flavorama? A really in-depth exploration of olfactory senses and all the different components that go into why some tastes good and when these things don't taste so good.
And why they vary among different people, you know.
That, different people have different responses to different foods. That was a very insightful interview. One of our most articulate guests, and we've had this gentleman on for many years, starting with his very first cookbook about 15 years ago, Bryant Terry, whose new book is called Black Food, Stories, Art, and Recipes from Across the American Diaspora. Then, in April 8th, Cara Mangini came up from San Francisco to sit in with us for her new book, The Vegetable Eater. Mm. And she sold a ton of books with her first one called The Vegetable Butcher, which kind of takes you by surprise.
Yeah.
She was wonderful to have on. A local guy that's made good, Tariano Gordon, who has just opened a restaurant as of last year called Vegan Mob, and his new book called Vegan Barbecue and Soul Food. It's out on West 3rd Street. He also has a location in San Francisco, and he fed us very well with vegan food.
Yeah.
Then April 26th, Edward Lee. We've had Edward on several times.
Yes.
He's one of the best chefs in America. His new book is Bourbon Land, A Spirited Love Letter to My Old Kentucky Whiskey.
Which is close to your heart.
Close to my heart. And we did this in preparation, of course, for the Kentucky Derby. He still has a great restaurant in Louisville, Kentucky called 610 Magnolia. He also opened a restaurant in Washington, D.C. And he's very provocative.
Mm-hmm.
Very provocative writer. You might want to check out Edward Lee. Then, May 11th, we had the pleasure of Sylvan Mishimo Brackett and his new book, Rintaro, The Cookbook. That, I know, was one of your favorite, the Japanese-inspired cookbook. And also, his restaurant is still going strong in San Francisco called Rintaro on 14th Street.
Yeah.
Not made it down there yet, but we hear great things about it. The book was beautiful. Then, June 8th, Matt Rudbar joined us for his latest book with Chef Dookie Hong called Korea World. And they sold a lot of copies of the first book, which came out a couple years ago, called Koreatown.
Mm-hmm.
This is Korea World. Again, the same theme of bringing Korean cooking into the home kitchen. They were really good. Joan Nathan. Boy, Joan, we go back a long way with Joan Nathan, probably 30 years. She's one of these superstars in the world of cooking, My Life in Recipes, Food, Family, and Memories. She has so much depth and knowledge about, especially Jewish cooking, but also all kinds of ethnic cooking. So based in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
It's wonderful. A local gal made good, Darlene Shriver. The book was The Salad Lab, Whisk, Toss, Enjoy. She became an internet sensation and lives in Rohnert Park and brought us some great foods and great products that she's making and still going strong with her book, The Salad Lab. Renato Pugliafito joined us from Brooklyn, New York, baking with an American accent. He has a very wonderful restaurant in downtown Brooklyn that's done great, and was wonderful to have him on the show. Then Ann Byrne, Baking in the American South, brand new book. One of the most successful authors in cookbook history. Mm. She wrote The Cake Doctor, and The Cake Doctor Revisited. Since 1999, those books have sold, this is hard to believe, 6 million copies around the
Isn't
world.
Isn't that mind-boggling? How did these books slip by us? Until we have them on the show.
Well, of course, but we don't really rely on boxed cake mixes.
No, that's true.
And that was the focus of these books. Yeah. But for millions of people that don't have time to whip up a homemade cake, she was able to customize these cake mixes to make them taste like they've come out of your home kitchen. Very popular, Ann Byrne. Then a repeat visit from one of our favorite authors and chefs at Raconteurs. Wouldn't you say Steve Sando from over in Napa Valley? The Bean Book. He's got about a half dozen bean books from Rancho Gordo. And I know you were a member of the Bean Club for a number of years.
Yes, I was. What happened was I would get every 6 months a big box of different kinds of beans, and it's like, I can't eat this many beans. So I'm on the reduced plan.
The reduced plan. Well, Steve is always, isn't he a kick?
Yes.
He always just says the most off-the-wall things. He's got a great mind and a great heart and spirit. It's great to have him in. Then we welcome to David Phu from his new book, Memory of Taste, Vietnamese-American Recipes from Phu Quoc, Oakland, and the Places in Between. Very insightful and articulate chef. He's just opened a new restaurant and wine and spirit bar on Divisadero in San Francisco called Gigi's, G-I-G-I-S. He's invited us down. We haven't had a chance to check it out.
Well, let's go.
Let's go to Gigi's and dig that. One of our best baking, actually, we had three or four great baking authors in. Nicola Lamb, her new book, Sift, The Elements of Baking. She's a British baking sensation that blew it apart in 2021 during COVID.
This was somebody that you had followed for years.
For about 3 years.
Yeah.
And I'm just wild for Nicola Lamb. Her recipes, the way she just spends the time to really get into a recipe and do beautiful, not only stills, but videos of how to beat these egg whites, how to fold in. It's a masterclass. And finally, she's put it in book form. It's called Sift, The Elements of Baking. Then one of our perennial favorites joined us in the studio, Rose Levy Barenbaum.
Yes.
The cake Bible queen.
And her husband.
Woody. They were a kick, as they always are. And this is about the 30th, 35th anniversary of this legendary book, The Cake Bible. Then on November 29th, Toni Tipton Martin joined us. When Southern Women Cook, and she was president of the IACP. Toni received a Julia Child Lifetime Achievement Award. She was very articulate. And all the Southern women that had been overlooked, but yet formed the foundation of so much great cooking, that was a great book. And today, we have the pleasure of our last interview of the year. We'll meet our author in just a few minutes. We also had great chefs on that came in with food producers. Brian Limoges from Enclo, the new restaurant in Sonoma. Brandon Gunther and Jamila Nixon, Rocker Oyster Fellers Seaside. Have you been out there to Bodega Bay?
I haven't. It's the old Lucas Wharf.
The old Lucas Wharf. And they were on before the restaurant opened. Probably the most successful restaurant in Sonoma County, new one, is Nick Ronan's Brigitte Bistro in Petaluma. Lines out the door every single day. And he came in and fed us beautiful French food.
Yes. And sort of simple, straight-ahead French food.
Yes.
Not fussy, silly stuff.
No, grand mère kind of food.
Yes.
And he's got a wonderful bear hug of an approach. Daryl Bell came over from Napa to debut his State Line Barbecue, and that's going great guns, too. Another barbecue opened up in Santa Rosa. Lowell Sheldon and Chef Gene Jackson just opened Downtown Barbecue. They closed Towns on 3rd Street and opened Downtown Barbecue. And that was fun. Domenica Catelli joined us from Catelli's The Rect in Geyserville. for the Healdsburg Food and Wine Festival. Remember that way back in April, May of this past year?
And it's coming up again.
Got to be coming up again. Christian and Ozzy were here from Noble Folk Ice Cream. That was great fun. And Mark Miller joined us from Underwood Restaurant in Grayton. He was the grand prize winner for the best rice dish in the world. You and I had a chance to judge that competition at Kendall Jackson.
Yeah.
And that was really fun. Sherry and Jeff Selesky came in with some great new popcorn, Comet Popcorn in Santa Rosa. This has been around for like 25 years. They're a legend in the popcorn world.
So what makes their popcorn different? Do you remember?
I think it's because they do some chanting over it. I don't know what it is, but it's good popcorn. Yeah. Jessie Manuel joined us again. Her Loxa Pop-Ups in Glen Ellen. Christina Topham, we mentioned from Spread Catering in Boise Hot Springs. Christian Kirkus has been doing very well with his new Tiza restaurant, the bistro in Healdsburg.
Yeah.
Hungarian-style food. That kind of Eastern Europeans.
Yeah, yeah.
Then Eric Huang sat in with us from Peking House in New York. He did a pop-up at the Flamingo. Remember, he brought in that great fried chicken?
Right.
Boy, was that good. Julie Dormier, Short Mama Barbecue. We talked with her about her homemade barbecue sauce that's doing great here in Santa Rosa. Jasmine Hugier and Leandra Beaver from Nimble and Finn's Ice Cream were here. They have locations in Santa Rosa and Garnville. And Lanny Chan and Nathan Bender joined them. Their Big Spoon Sauce Company. Remember that?
Yes.
That was a wild combo. Yeah. We're going to take a break. Well, let's do a couple more, and then we'll take a break. Yeah. Robert Nujesko came in from Charlie's at the Windsor Golf Course. He made some dang fine chili. Remember, we tasted some chili with him. Angelica Nunez from the Windsor Cinco de Mayo, along with Pedro Diaz, we did a mole tasting. Gareth Owens came in, remember, this February, from Parish Cafe in Healdsburg. He brought in some delicious food, too. Susan Mall from Volo Chocolate and Kara Williams, assistant pastry chef from the Dry Creek Kitchen, came in and joined Emily Ash Lamb and you for our first ever professional chocolate chip cookie tasting contest.
Yeah.
That was great fun.
Yeah.
Alyssa Weber from Della Fattoria was the winner from 14 different bakeries. Her cookies were the best.
So I remember that distinctly because all of the cookies were delicious.
They were.
How would you pick a best one?
It was tough.
Yeah.
But she came out a few points ahead. Dave Barber and Grant Crandall from the Atlantic Seaboard Wine Commission joined us for a tasting. Alejandro Zinman from Stone Edge Winery, Tracy Matson from Cookie Take a Bite, and Michelle Smith from Dave's Gourmet Ice Cream joined and sat in. Michelle Anna Jordan sat in from Sebastopol. Brooke Hazen from Gold Ridge Farm. Joe Wolf from Marla Bakery in Santa Rosa. Amanda Janney from KM Mushrooms in Santa Rosa. We had the pleasure of Janet Fletcher's company several times this past year to keep us all up and coming about the latest cheeses from Planet Cheese. Andrea Card, winemaker from Delicato. They bought Rustic Restaurant, Francis Ford Coppola in Geyserville. Octavio Diaz from Matote. Bill Cordell from the Tamales Mano here in Petaluma. Ryan Wren from the Sonoma County Meat Company. Angelo Sacerdote from Petaluma Pie. Tracy Sherpos from the Artisan Cheese Festival. And coming up in just a month and a half, we'll talk again to Poppy Tucker from New Orleans and Mardi Gras. Coming up next, Paula Johnson and the Julia Child Kitchen.
It's your radio buddy Jimmy Failla inviting you to please join me for Fox Across America.
Which loser do I vote for?
Now live, mornings 9 to noon on Sonoma County's FM News Talk, KSRO.
Looking for the best place for your furry friend? Welcome to Paradise Pet Resort.
Paradise Pet Resort offers all-day play in their amazing indoor and outdoor yards with daycare drop-ins for just $42 a day or grab a 10-day pass for only $380.
Need boarding? Enjoy a $56 a night rate, which includes daycare, plus no extra fees for house food or intact mails.
Your pup will love the large doggy swimming pool, and you can keep an eye on them with the webcams.
They now offer a full-service dog grooming salon for your convenience. Come take a tour of their fantastic facility anytime.
Why settle for less? The other guys charge $55 a day for daycare, and you can't even tour their kennels.
Choose Paradise Pet Resort, where your pets play all day. Visit us online or call to schedule your tour today.
Paradise Pet Resort, where tails wag and fun never ends.
Paradise Pet Resort.
agricultural community farmers markets bring you fresh produce, meat, and dairy each week year-round.
Saturday and Wednesday mornings through February, 8:30 to 1, the tradition continues at the Santa Rosa Community Farmers Market in Farmers Lane Plaza. The Wednesday market has dozens of vendors, including veggies from Ortiz Family Farm and chicken and eggs from Rancho Villa in Petaluma. Rojas Family Farm offers citrus. Camacho Family Farm has winter produce from Santa Rosa, and grab local honey from Gerard's Honey. Saturdays, you'll find Bee Haven Honey, lots of veggies and meats from Betha Springs Ranch, cheeses from Acadena Cheese, and berries from Chem. Pick up fresh bread and pastries from West One Bread, Redbird Bakery, and Revolution Bread. Geyserville Gourmet and Brothers Products offer pickled veggies, locally made jams from Stukenbroker Farm, freshly made pasta from the Italian Corner, and local coffee from Bella Rosa Roastery.
Info online at ilovefarmersmarkets.org.
Maum Fireplace Center, proud sponsor of the Golden State Warriors for over 10 years. Maum Fireplace Center in Santa Rosa features the most trusted high-efficiency fireplace inserts, including Enviro, Quadrafire, Regency, and Yodel. Find your flame at Maum Fireplace Center, 368 Yolanda Avenue, on the web at maumfireplacecenter.com. Maum Fireplace Center, we satisfy your burning desires.
Attention employers and HR managers. The next North Bay Job Fair is Tuesday, January 28th at Luther Burbank Center for the Arts in Santa Rosa. Register now for the most significant job fair in Sonoma County at northbayjobfair.com. We'll deliver the resumes of the job seekers at the fair the next day, and you can take advantage of job fair radio specials to magnify your recruitment efforts. Get more info and register for your company or nonprofit today at northbayjobfair.com. Find your next best employee at the January 28th North Bay Job Fair.
SRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
In the KSRO kitchen. Good morning, everybody. So glad you could join us on our last show of 2024, starting our 38th year, January 1st, as usual, God willing. And we wanted to save one of the great cookbooks that came out in 2024 for our last interview of the year. And it did not get, like we, John and I were talking earlier in the show, reviewing all the cookbook authors we've had on. This is one that we think was missed and didn't get the attention that it deserves.
Don't you think it, because it wasn't a cookbook, and we expect when you see Julia Child's name on something that it'll include her recipes, but this wasn't her recipes.
This was even better, because we have a lot of great Julia Child cookbooks, but we don't have a peek behind the scenes to say, how did she accomplish all of this? What did her kitchen look like? Yeah. What were her favorite tools? This book explores this like no other book has. It's called Julia Child's Kitchen, The Design, Tools, Stories, and Legacy of an Iconic Space. And with us is the author of this book, Paula J. Johnson. Good morning, Paula.
Good morning.
Nice to have you along with us. Would you give us your background, basically? I know you've been in the museum world for many years. What is your current position?
Sure. I'm the curator of food history at the National Museum of American History of the Smithsonian Institution.
Well, gee whiz. How long have you had that position?
Well, I've been at the museum for... next week, it'll be 34 years.
Wow.
And in this position, probably for the last, I don't know, 25 or 30, something like that. Yeah.
I just want to let you know that my grandson just started American University
in
Washington, D.C., and he went to the Smithsonian and saw the Julia Child exhibit.
Excellent.
So
Good man.
He made his grandpa very, very proud.
So I have a question to ask you about the exhibit. Was it at one time, did it spend time at the CIA, the Culinary Institute of America at Napa?
No, it didn't.
They had a great show there for a long time. It was Julia's Kitchen. It had all of these things that she used and all of that stuff. And I, I, I never knew.
Well, that's the interesting thing, because there was parts and thousands of different bits of Julia spread out all over the country. And I think it was you and your team that helped collate and curate, over 1,000 different tools and gadgets for the installation?
Absolutely, absolutely. And we've had it since 2001. That's when we collected it from her home in Cambridge. So we went up, and this was, of course, when she was moving back to her home state of California. And our team asked itself, well, what's going to happen to all of her things? So we gave her a phone call, talked to her a little bit about her plans, and she invited us to come up and take a look and also to talk to her. We really wanted to hear her stories about really the history of the kitchen and also its contents, its many, many, many tools and pieces of equipment and mementos.
So you had many conversations with Julia during the acquisition and curation and sitting down with her and chronicling and catalog all these tools and gadgets.
Absolutely. It took us, when we first walked in, you know, we hadn't really understood just how many layers of time were represented in this marvelous room, and just how the layout was so intuitive to the kind of work that she was doing. So we sat down with her and spoke with her about, you know, again, the history, and then approached her about collecting the entire room, which, you know, she had to check with some of her family members first. And then she said, sure, I want to donate this to the National Museum for the benefit of the American public. And that was when we really got into speaking with her about all the parts and the pieces and the philosophy. And it was a marvelous couple of days, I'll tell you that.
So it must have taken you a long time, because the book, it's just mind-boggling, the things that are in there, you know, the tools and all of that stuff that are represented. Mm-hmm. Where did she keep them all?
Well, you know, she had her her cabinets and the drawers were just jam-packed. She also had three pantries that were not in the main room, the main room proper. So she had a pastry pantry, a food pantry, and a so-called butler's pantry, where she had her glassware and her, you know, her good china and things like that. But we only collected the main room, and believe it or not, all of that stuff that we have fit into nooks and crannies of that amazing room. Mm.
Who did the photography? If you didn't have one bit of narrative and just did a photography book, it would be worth the price.
I am so glad that you asked that, because, you know, one of the unsung hero groups at the Smithsonian are the Smithsonian photographers. And we had photographs taken when we first collected. We had a photographer in the room with us. But then over the course of time, of course, it's 20 years, I've been working more recently with a woman named Jacqueline Nash, who is our photographer at the National Museum of American History. And her ability to just find the essence of an object is just, I just think it's marvelous. And to work with her to really bring some of these tools to life was, again, just a marvelous experience.
It's really heartwarming to realize how relevant Julia Child continues to be.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what is it that she possessed? Because she wasn't the greatest cook in the world. She wasn't the greatest teacher in the world. But something about her essence just is so attractive.
It is. And, you know, I have spent 20 years or more watching people interact with this kitchen. And I've spoken to many, many of them. And, again, these are people who just have this appreciation for what she was trying to do and how she brought people in to this idea of enjoying cooking. Because, you know, there are just so many messages out there about cooking as drudgery and cooking as, mm-hmm. you know, just so time consuming. But, you know, Julia really brought people in. made them feel like they too could participate in this and enjoy it, and that it was worthwhile. She gave people the courage, you know, to try something new, and again, to make cooking not just, you know, putting food on the table, but a social experience. That's how she lived. You know, all of the stories that I recorded from people who worked with her in the kitchen, it's all about, yes, we did this, we did this. I don't remember any of the recipes we made, but I do remember we all had fun because Julia made it so. Mm-hmm. So I think that vibe, whatever it is, that secret sauce of Julia Child, is what comes through and what people really respond to, and they want to just be part of that.
There are so many moments, touchstones along the way, mm-hmm. reading the book. For each page is filled with a personal anecdote about Julia, marvelous photos of her and her husband, Paul, the people she worked with behind the scenes, the evolution of the television show, how the cookbooks mm-hmm. came about, the editors she wrote with. It was just a magnificent life, and also touches on her time in the OSS during World War II.
Yeah.
She led it seems like a life that was manufactured. It was so much bigger than life.
So
it
would you,
was a life.
Would you
absolutely.
Talk a little bit about her husband, Paul, and his role? Because he was intimately involved with all of this stuff, too.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, one of my regrets is that I never was able to meet him. He passed away in 1994. And he was such a big part of her life and who she became. And as I was doing this research, one of the things I was able to do was to go to Cambridge, to Harvard University, to the Schlesinger Library, where all of Julia's papers and photographs and, you know, just a tremendous archival repository of Julia and Paul Child. And he, of course, was the person who introduced her to food. You know, he was a Renaissance man, a cook, a wine expert, an artist, a poet, a writer. And so when they met in World War II, when they were both in the OSS, that was the beginning of what became, you know, Julia Child. And she was always, you know, very very generous about saying, you know, without Paul, there would be no Julia Child, because he was both the inspiration and the person who helped her develop into, you know, an effective teacher on television, into someone who gave these incredibly wonderful food demonstrations, who was so meticulous about getting all of the material in the cookbooks just right.
We're going to take a break, Paula. Just be stay with us. We'll be back in 2.5 minutes. The new book is Julia Child's Kitchen, The Design, Tools, Stories, and Legacy of an Iconic Space. Paula J. Johnson. If you love cooking, if you love design elements, if you love whimsy, this is a book you really want to take a look at.
Sonoma County's News Talk, KSRO, on FM at 103.5 in Santa Rosa and Windsor, and now at 96.9 in Petaluma.
After 4 long years, the Inn at the Tides in Bodega Bay warmly welcomes you back to the 36th Annual Winemaker Dinner Series at the elegant Bayview Restaurant. Enjoy 5 evenings of fine food perfectly paired with impressive local wines in the Bayview's comfortable, intimate setting overlooking Bodega Bay. A 4- or 5-course dinner is presented alongside the winemaker's stories and their unique knowledge of the terroir. January 17th is the first of 2025. Dan Barwick and Dan Costa share their stories at the Trichini and Convene Winemaker Dinner. Book your reservation right away. This winemaker dinner features 5 elegant courses. Start with seared scallops and grilled asparagus paired with Trichini Sauvignon Blanc. Then Alaskan halibut with Convene Chardonnay, followed by duck and lamb, each paired with a specially selected Pinot Noir. Oh, dessert, a fruit tart with fresh whipped cream paired with Trichini Moscato d'Asti. For information or to book a reservation, go to inatthetides.com today.
Touchdown! Fountain Mites, the official pizza of your San Francisco 49ers, is the perfect place to enjoy the games. Happy hour specials Monday through Thursday and all Sunday long. Watch the Sunday Ticket at three locations, Cleveland Avenue in Santa Rosa, Rohnert Park on Commerce, and Novato. Order up their legendary crispy curly pepperoni pizza. Try their new sticky Kogi wings or kickin' Korean barbecue wings. Online at mountainmikes.com.
There's no place we'd rather be.
I got in a really bad car accident. Should I get a lawyer?
How do I get full custody of my kids?
Have legal questions? Go to KSRO.com and click on Sonoma County Legal Line. It's free and confidential.
Can I fire someone if they're an at-will employee?
My partner is not paying his child support. What should I do?
How do I get rid of a DUI on my record?
Got a legal question? Get an answer. Go to KSRO.com and click on Sonoma County Legal Line. It's free and confidential.
In the KSRO kitchen, I'm Steve Garner, along with Chef John Ash. And Paula J. Johnson is with us this morning. Her new book is The Julia Child's Kitchen, The Design, Tools, Stories, and Legacy of an Iconic Space. Paula, as I was reading the book, I came across that fabulous section, Focus on Gadgets, on page 156. And I recognized a gadget that I have had in my kitchen drawer for probably 50 years. John, I call your attention to number 63.
Okay.
Look on the photo there.
Yeah, the char opener.
Here it is. This is the one I brought in last week and told you this is one of my most indispensable tools.
Look at it. It's all rusty.
This is the jar opener. I know you can't know all the 1,500 tools in the book, but this one I own, Paula.
Excellent.
You should donate that.
I should. So if after we get off the air, look at number 63. That is the exact one, the jar opener. Honestly, I could not cook. I could not function without my jar opener.
Well, the other thing, when that whole list of 65 different gadgets are things I've never heard of, like a chestnut knife. Really? Where do you get chestnuts? Yes. And what do you need a knife for? You know, all of that kind of stuff.
Peel them, yes.
Were you stumped on any of the gadgets that you ended up finding and that Julia either couldn't remember what they were or you couldn't identify and didn't end up in the collection?
We were stumped several times. Julia was never stumped. When we were doing the first inventory, because we had to inventory everything before we actually asked permission from the museum to collect this, we had to list everything we wanted. And, you know, we would go through every drawer and take quick notes, take photographs. And there were things that was just stumped us. And there were three of us up there. And we just couldn't figure it out. A leg of lamb bone holder, meaning one. That was one. And, of course, she had two of those. There were other things that I'm looking at the picture right now, trying to remember what were some of the other things. But we would put them in a little pile. She would come down to talk to us now and then. And she would just go through them all and say, oh, yes, this. And not only identify it, but then also say, well, I remember I got this from, you know, a friend sent this to me. And it was just wonderful to be able to see those things. Oh, another one was the stone crab claw cracker.
Right.
Yeah. And I know that that's a joke that Julia played on us because she had it when we went up to collect everything for the final time. You know, we took everything as it was and keyed it to where it was supposed to go. And here was this stone crab claw cracker on, a cutting board kind of next to the coffee machine. And I said, what? This wasn't here when we were here before. But because Julia had it there, she wanted us to have it. So, of course, we've got this stone crab claw cracker sitting there. And people walk by and say, what's that? What's that? Oh, yeah. Mysteries.
I have to tell you that I absolutely laughed so loudly that of the photograph of Julia's cat curled up on the open dishwasher door, and then the picture of her cat sleeping in a large stock pot under the counter. Did you see those photos, John?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. What a whimsical kitchen.
So she had, she apparently had, well, some, what's the word I'm searching for? Affection for animals.
Yes.
Of all kinds.
Oh, absolutely.
Because
absolutely.
There were lots of pictures of not only cats, but fish and all of that other stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And roosters and chickens. You know, she's not quite as fond of them as Jeff Papin is, but she had a lot of roosters, chickens, and fish, and then, of course, cats. She adored cats. She had cats, as we now know, the cats made themselves at home in the kitchen. I thank you for telling me that, because I roared when I saw those. I said, these have to go into the book, because people won't believe it.
She loved technology. I mm-hmm. somehow didn't realize how much she embraced anything new. She loved the first microwaves. She loved, mm-hmm. of course, the Cuisinart. Mm-hmm. My gosh, she said, this is, ladies asked for this for Christmas.
And the food processor.
And the food processor, too.
She was. I actually remember seeing her, because I'm an old guy now, use the food processor when it was totally unknown to most people. And it didn't work so well, but she did that on a television show.
Yeah.
But it was, she was.
Well, it wasn't until the late 1970s that Cuisinart made it. But she was an early adopter, wasn't she, of new technology?
Absolutely. And she took it upon herself to test things so that she could speak with authority when she was telling people, because people would ask her, well, what about this? What about this? Mm-hmm. She wanted to really have, again, she wanted proof in being able to say, yes, this is worth keeping, this one isn't, you know, that kind of thing. And she just, again, wanted whatever would make cooking, whatever help a cook, mm-hmm. not necessarily just blindly adopting everything that was you know, made for convenience, because that wasn't the point. It was, is this a tool that will help us make us better cooks?
You know, it's interesting that as famous as she was, she could have generated millions in additional money by just lending her name to any one of thousands of tools or gadgets. But yet she didn't do that.
She did not. That was her lifelong rule, that she did not endorse products. That she wanted to be believable and wanted people to trust her. And she just felt that, you know, shilling for a company was crossing a line.
Of course, she was a mentor to us all. You know, if Julia said this was a good thing to get, you probably got it, you know, because of that.
Absolutely.
So there were, I love the hints in there of doing things. The one that I love, and I wish I would have paid attention to it when I redid my kitchen, and that were worktops. She said they need to have a 2.5 to 3 inch overhang so that when it comes time to clean up, you can scrape the crumbs and the whatever you've been chopping on there into a bowl to get rid of it.
It was brilliant.
It was. It's like, if you look at kitchen designs today, there isn't a 2.5 to 3 inch. They should have paid attention to her.
We'll take a quick break. Paula, don't go away. We'll be back with Paula J. Johnson. We're talking to her from Washington, D.C. She's the curator for the American section of the Smithsonian Institute. All the culinary falls under her jurisdiction. And her new book is Julia Child's Kitchen, The Design Tools, Stories, and Legacy of an Iconic Space. And one lucky Good Food Hour listener this morning will win a copy of this book.
Sonoma County's News Talk, KSRO, on FM at 103.5 in Santa Rosa and Windsor, 96.9 in Petaluma, and 94.5 in Sonoma at KSRO.com and on the KSRO app.
What is one of Dr. Tom's favorite procedures?
The waist area is one of my favorite areas to perform smart lipo laser liposuction for both women and men. When our patients regain their waistline, they have renewed self-confidence. They love the way they fit in their clothes and how they look in the mirror. Even a small reduction in waist size can take years off your silhouette.
Dr. Tom introduced Smart Lipo to the North Bay in 2007. He has performed hundreds of these procedures under local anesthesia.
Local anesthesia is safe and well-tolerated by our patients. You can actually have breakfast on the day of your surgery, and you'll appreciate quicker recovery with less discomfort.
There's a reason he's been voted the Press Democrat's best cosmetic surgeon of Sonoma County 8 years in a row. Reclaim your waist and proudly put your hands on your hips.
Let's stay young together.
Contact Dr. Tom for a complimentary consultation. More info at drtomcosmetic.com. drtomcosmetic.com.
Agricultural community farmers markets bring you fresh produce, meat, and dairy each week year-round.
In Petaluma, the Eastside Market at Lucchese Park is Tuesdays from 10 to 1:30. The winter veggies are abundant. Shop Wheeler Farm from Sebastopol, Camacho Family Farm from Santa Rosa, and Tole Valley Farm from Petaluma. Fruit from Kem Farm, citrus and more from Rojas Family Farm and Ortiz Brothers. Petaluma's own Strauss Family Creamery has certified organic yogurt, butter, ice cream, and their famous whole milk. Anna Seafood sells fish straight from the docks. Gilardi eggs direct from the ranch. Locally produced packaged foods include Geyserville Gourmet, Redbird Bakery, and Handsome Carver's Nut Butters. You'll also find fresh honey from No Bowl Beekeeping. Restaurant quality food vendors including Chavez Pizza, What a Chicken, and Tacos Don Pepe. Local artisans and crafters have candles, jewelry, and so much more. Grab coffee from Myriad and tea from Tea and Trumpets.
Info online at ilovefarmersmarkets.org.
Does your business need advertising but cash flow is a challenge? Then contact us at the My Sonoma Deals program. It's a cashless program based on trade. Are you a restaurant, a golf course, a boutique, car wash, bowling alley, jewelry store, or florist? There are so many categories. Contact My Sonoma Deals now to find out if your business qualifies. Just go online to mysonomadeals.com and click on contact. That's mysonomadeals.com and click on contact.
We're chatting with Paula J. Johnson today, the author of Julia Child's Kitchen, The Design Tools, Stories, and Legacy of an Iconic Space. What a fabulous front cover, eh, John?
Yeah, it's great.
With Julia cracking an egg, and the photographer must have had a very fast lens because the egg yolk is descending into the stainless steel bowl. What a provocative, enticing cover that is, Paula.
Thank you for mentioning that. I love that photograph. It was part of a series taken by Albie Walton, a Cambridge photographer. And I adore this one because it really indicates what we say in the book, which is that cooking with Julia had its moments of fun.
Yeah, you can feel the electricity.
There's another photograph that I really love, too. It's on page 111. And it's Julia and Paul in their kitchen with tools. And the table is just piled with all of these things. And the point is made that many of these, most of these are in the collection. So you can find it. And it's like, I have no idea what any of these things are.
They are. I love this photograph, too, because it shows Paul kind of standing behind her, bemused.
Yes.
And she is just delighted with all of these tools. And I think you guys read this book so carefully. I really appreciate that. But there were a couple of points where she had said something like, well, you know, there's a difference between having, you know, a fully stocked kitchen and a junk shop, you know, and she didn't want it to look like a junk shop.
You know, the photo that John is referring to, the one, Paul is kind of a combination of amusement, delight, and also resignation.
It's a great photo.
And anything else that caught your eye, John?
Well, one of the things that she talks about is that she describes herself as a knife freak because she felt that good knives were so important. But interestingly, she said, you only need three knives, a paring knife, a big, I don't know what she meant by a big chopping knife and a serrated
like a cleaver
knife.
Or something.
Well,
a chef's knife, yeah.
Yeah, chef's knife, I think is what she meant. And a serrated knife for bread. But then she goes on to talk about all of the other knives she has. And there's a picture of the knife collection, and it's like, whoa.
Stunning.
Yeah.
Isn't it stunning?
Most of us, there's a knife. I'm going to use it. It doesn't matter what the shape is or any of that.
Yeah. She said that about knives and about gadgets. I'm a gadget freak also. But the knives are just amazing. And when we were interviewing her, and she said that, yes, you just really need three knives. And then she went on to say, well, then this one is nice.
Yes, yeah, that was great.
And then what about this one?
Yeah.
And, oh, my goodness. And then she related the story about being on the plane with the Jinsu knife salesman who, in the days before 9/11, when you could actually bring your, you know, knife bag on the plane with you, she... You know, they were comparing knives, and he gave her several knives on the plane during their trip. And I just,
again,
love that.
Well, Julia lived her life bigger than life. It was a joyful life, a full steam ahead life, right to the end. Mm-hmm. She's really an inspiration for all of us in the new year. Paula, would you give us your favorite number today between 1 and 10?
8.
Caller number 8 at 636-1350 will win a copy of this must-own book, Julia Child's Kitchen, The Design Tools, Stories, and Legacy of an Iconic Space, written by our guest this morning, Paula J. Johnson, caller number 8. Paula, thank you. It's been a joy.
Yes, I have enjoyed this so much as well. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Great. And next time we're in Washington, D.C., I'll call you up and we can stroll the Julia Child Kitchen together.
And see how many things
Absolutely.
We can't identify.
Absolutely. And I can even show you some other culinary tools that aren't on display just yet.
All right. Well, I'll hold you to it. Thanks so much, Paula.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Take care, everybody. Have a wonderful, wonderful New Year's, and we'll talk again in the new year. For John Ash, I'm Steve Garner.
Hello, Sonoma County. This is Will Cain. Please join me for The Will Cain Show, weekday afternoons from 3 to 4, right here on Sonoma County's FM News Talk, KSRO.
Imagine a place where tradition meets innovation, a place where every baker from beginner to pro is part of a thriving community. Welcome to Central Milling's Artisan Baking Center in Petaluma, where this beautiful facility is more than just a state-of-the-art baking facility. It's a hub for lifelong learning and skill mastery.